Well, if I may, I'm going to say that it's no management. Absolutely no management. You're not willing to manage your herd of elk, and so that leaves the livestock producer out hanging out totally dry. There's no management at all. None. You're not willing to manage numbers. You're not willing to manage disease. So what are you managing?
We're managing the risk of transmission.
No, you're not.
Yes, we are. We are making efforts to manage the risk of transmission by separating those situations where elk and cattle are next to each other. Now, and I'll go further on, and it's a lengthy conversation and a detailed conversation, and this group may decide that it wants to have it. By it, I mean a discussion about the disease, about why the statewide working group came to this option and not that option, and it all has to do with the disease, it all has to do with values, and for want of a better way to put it, there is no clear way forward on eradication, on the disease eradication. And there is no clear evidence that numerical reductions in elk lead to a reduced seroprevalence rate. At a science level, those things are not givens. So again, we could, if the group decides that in this pursuit we need to talk about some of those details, we can do that. And I would look to others that are involved with the agenda. If we need to back up further and understand why the tools are what they are, talk more about that development conversation and process, I would look to others. We can decide to do that. Just be advised, that's just going to put the completion here of the local work plan further out. And maybe that's okay, because again, if the group decides that that's okay, there's some capacity already in place, as it was in place last year. I'll let you go ahead.
Quentin, I wonder perhaps it would help a little bit if you illustrated some of the activities that took place during the last year relative to the plan.
Sure. So, and these are available on the website. I've got a few copies up here if folks want to look at that.
You might have to restate that.
I'm sorry, yeah. So the question was, so what are some things that happened last year, last risk period, winter and early spring of 2013? There were two management removals of elk. At the time we were calling them dispersal hunts, putting a few number of hunters on the ground in situations that identified where the elk could be harvested, and also suitable habitat where we weren't going to chase elk. Again, we're not looking to rid the landscape of elk. We're just looking to keep them in those acute situations. Out of those two dispersal hunts, management removals, 13 elk were taken. There were, and I'll look to the region, there were how many fencing efforts?
Three
fencing efforts. Those are efforts where fence was provided, put up around attractants, haystacks. So let's put a fence up here. We essentially remove the attractant, or at least the availability of attractant elk. The idea being that those elk don't then come in once they realize that there's not a reward there. You keep those elk at a distance. There are also some hazing efforts that were put on the ground. Hazing efforts. So that's the identification of a person. Sometimes that person's on foot, sometimes that person's on four-wheeler, sometimes that person's on horse, sometimes that person's on out of a truck. And the objective is, with some planning, okay, where are places where those elk are not representing a risk because they're not close to livestock? Let's think about moving them to the degree we can to those places. And of course, the flip side of that coin is, where are some places where those elk, when they are there, represent a heightened risk because they're in close proximity to cattle? Let's move those out of those places. And we have people assigned to do just exactly that. Those were the three examples, the three kinds of management actions that showed up last year. Some things that haven't showed up that are in the list of tools, and again, you can look there. Perhaps there's a hunting season definition that makes sense in this context. Perhaps there's a habitat manipulation on public or private land or both that makes sense, that we can convince ourselves, all parties involved, that there would be a better elk distribution in the context of brucellosis risk. Those are some ideas that the working group and the commission recognized as potentially influencing elk distribution, but those sorts of things haven't showed up in implementation yet.
Folks, I'm going to remind you that when you have comments or questions, it's not a personal attack on Quentin. So I prefer to have you left out of those statements and just questions that are made.
That's kind of what I'm saying, but as I've heard this said in other meetings, I came over here to see what Quentin's got in his toolbox. He came up with the thing that said wherever he bought it, Snap-on, and he's going to open up and show us what it is. But I didn't come over here to listen to a bunch of overblown rhetoric. It's not relevant to what Quentin's doing. We need to see what he's doing. I didn't come here to hear anything else. And I don't like to drive the knife.
If I may, the reason we built the so with that goal in mind, it's been our experience in this effort that that not everybody is on the same page. It's new. The concept of bridging a statewide working group, its recommendations, the commission adoption, local implementation. To be very clear to that point, we're here to understand what other presentations folks want. But just be advised, in the pursuit of that, one of our first steps tonight is to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So some of it may be rehashing through. We may be missing your first intent. But I just wanted you to know that was one of our first intents, one of our first tactical intents tonight, is to make sure that folks are on the same page of what this conversation is.
So thank you. Do you have
a
help,
Bobby?
Sorry.
I don't
know
what
to
say.
I'll defer to the rest of the committee. I would like the people here have a show of hands who have put in fencing prior to last year, as most of us, a lot of us, done it in the 1980s and 90s and 2000s. So, you know, it was only three last year, but how many of us have put fence in way before that? So raise your hand if you put fence up or under haystacks already.
So I guess, Alan, I'm asking just from my perspective of being a little bit removed working in 4-H and family consumer science stuff. You just want to make a point that that's the tool that you've used, and it's kind of...
Well, you know, it sounded like three people did it. But, like Gary and I were just talking, Gary put him in, you know, he fenced his haystacks in 1980. I didn't mind in the 90s, I fenced my old hay meadow in 2000.
Right, okay.
So we could, you know, to change some of these issues. So, you know, it's not just out there that's only these two or three people doing it.
If I may. That's a very good point, Representative Redfield. And what I meant to, another way to think about these tools and their application is the statewide working group and the commission's endorsement of that identify risk management of Bruce Wilson by addressing commingling events as a justification for elk management actions. And he's exactly right. Some of those actions are mere images of actions that have already been in place for other reasons. Game damage. Hey, those elk are taking hay that I've stacked. Let's put a fence up that. So he's exactly right. There's long history of some of these tools for other reasons. Again, in that context, one way to think about this is the commission has said, hey, risk management, addressing commingling situations between elk and cattle during the risk period inside the DSA, that's a legitimate justification for some elk management actions to show up. That's another way to think about the commission's product for application here in the valley.
So on the EMRs, not the name of the group, how do you, and they come down out of the hill for reasons, they're hungry, so how do you avoid when they have a dispersal out that they don't go over on the neighbors?
That's a great question. It's a
question.
Yep. You want to repeat it?
You already stand up and talk about it. You've been here around the bush a couple times.
When the elk management group met, how did they, when you have the elk management removal, small scale, how did you avoid them going on the neighbors? Because they're not down here because they're too much feed in the hills.
It's a great question, and it's a great question because it really speaks to what I think the statewide working group and then the commission recognizes. Hey, there's some of these actions. It's easy enough to focus on the push, and maybe the push is a hazer, maybe the push is a hunter taking an elk. It's easy enough to focus on that, but what's the response? Where are they going to go? Again, the statewide working group, the commission had the same sort of question. Their answer was, well, what better answer to that circumstance is that question, that uncertainty, that potentially enhanced risk, is to assemble the folks that have those experiences, assemble the folks that are next to each other in the landowner context, and make sure that the management actions that are described and applied have that comprehensive look to them. And it may well be that an EMR, an elk management removal, makes perfect sense when you talk to one landowner, but when you think about the habitat that's available and where those elk would likely move with the presence of hunters, maybe when you blow up that conversation, when you expand that conversation to the three neighbors, maybe that elk management removal suddenly makes no sense. So that was the answer, is to assemble a conversation so that all the folks that might be influenced by that action and the response to that action into one room. And let's make sure we make all those connections so that we don't unintentionally, in the pursuit of a good thing, end up with a bad thing.
Okay,
I just have a suggestion. It would help me, a map. And we have anybody that has an elk problem with their on their deeded ground, let's look at it and get it out so we know what the big problem is. Who has a problem? What the problem is? I'm serious. We need a map. And it's not because I want to hunt there. I don't hunt there. I hunt somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
But we need a map.
I didn't mean to dismiss that. I think you're a little bit ahead of me.
I know.
I'll expand your comment to a concept, if I may. Understanding where they are and what they are is undoubtedly information that will feed this conversation.
And if we have the deeded grounds that are having problems, it would be easier for me to understand the problem for the producer.
Whether it's a map, whether it's an enumeration of the kinds and the times of the content, whatever it would be.
It would have to be a map.
Well, the only reason I'm saying that is because there are, so it's clear what you would like, but there's others in the conversation, and there may be other approaches to getting that sort of information or the functionality of that sort of information. That's what I meant to say. There may be alternative approaches that others in the conversation would advocate. It's to the same answer.
You know, and I guess what I would like to see that comes out of this discussion is, I mean, we do have some tools here. We personally do hazing, and that works pretty well for us. But there are times of the year where we need a little bit more incentive, and so these tools open up that possibility. I think that what we're looking at is the conversation that says, yes, elk management removals will work, and let's see how many we need and how that's going to work, and get an idea of how we can apply those in situations that people right now are feeling so frustrated in. Hazing is great, but it doesn't work in a lot of places, as we all have discussed and we all know. But, you know, if you can discourage a few, then the whole takes a different look at coming back. And so I think there's some elk behavior that we know happens, that when you use these elk management removals, you're influencing that behavior because we know that they're not going to want to come down and be put at risk. So they'll think twice about coming, and then maybe they start thinking three times and four times and they don't come at all. You know, maybe that's sort of a Pollyanna look, but I think that's the purpose of these tools, is to be able to use them on smaller scales, getting bigger and bigger into our local areas, and then know how they're going to help it.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Do you
want to
go again?
I'll let the commissioner go. He's hiring me. I guess the thing that I noticed, and you've alluded to it, is with the hazing, the thing that at least in our experience, was that we requested hazing because there were so many animals in a group. And we didn't used to see that because these elk were dispersed
out to the heads of creeks and out to the heads of drainages, and a few of them would drift around. But we did. I can't. When I was growing up, I can't recall ever seeing any group much bigger than 100 head. And I'm probably being real naive because I didn't hunt that much. But even so, 1,000 head, 500 head, that was, we just never saw that. Now, and I think that's part of the problem is, at least with Jerry and I, are these huge, and the Kinkies, these huge numbers that come in, and they take up a hell of a lot of room, and they have to go somewhere. And they have to keep moving around to find more feed. And I think the 800-pound gorilla in this room here that we're not talking about starts with a W, and it ends with an F. And it's caused the elk to get bigger, band together for protection. And that's his personal opinion. I'm not trying to be scientific at all about it, but that's one observation that I have that I never saw before in 30 years ago.
And I think if you polled everybody in this room, we would all say that we're seeing elk behavior that we've never seen in numbers that we've never seen before. And so that just makes our task that much harder.
Exactly. And I don't envy you guys at all. And I'm not. It's not a criticism of what you're doing. All I'm saying is I'm just observing.
And I think that that's a good point. It's a discussion. Quinn, forgive me. I didn't memorize this document, but is predator control in the toolbox?
The statewide working group recognized the question. That is there something about the predator-prey relationship, the presence of wolves, the presence of a more complete suite of predators, that's influencing, that's contributing to one degree or another of these concentrations of elk, or the timing of these concentrations of elk, or the location of these concentrations of elk. When you speak to your observations, and I certainly do not challenge those observations, you've been on the landscape in a long while, to give another context, not in contradiction, but just to speak to the research piece that the degree that has been done. It's unclear. There are some situations where that adjustment, at least at fine scales, does indeed happen. They respond that way. There are other places with different habitat types where, and maybe it's got nothing to do except with numbers of wolves in addition to the habitat, perhaps, where you don't see that relationship. So let me just swirl back. What the statewide working group recognizes, hey, in the pursuit of adjusted elk distribution, it may be that the local conversation comes to some focus on wolves. If that conversation is there to definitively identify it to the commission, to the reviewing public, that, yep, that relationship's there, and we think this response would address that, the influence of that relationship to transmission.
So, just so I'm clear on what that means, that if as a local conversation we identified wolves as causing more of a problem for bringing elk to us, then that would be a discussion that could be had with the commission about possible numbers or...
And again, it's probably best to keep the conversation in I mean, there's two things to think about in the conversation. There are those things that are available.
Right.
There's a general wolf season right now. And in the context of available tools, that's about as liberal as it gets. So that's there. Anything beyond that would be an addition conversation. You're going to have to build a different approach to wolf management, and you're going to have to go through the public process that does that. And the public process, the very candidate, is going to look close at the justification for that sort of thing. But certainly it's available for the conversation. The local working group thinks that that's a piece that needs to be addressed. There's nothing that says you can't have that conversation.
Case, I got Ryan first, and then...
Could you put that cone in the parking lot?
Yes, absolutely. Would you like me to put down the W word or just predator control?
There's a lot of grizzly bears out there now, too.
Okay.
Mountain lions increasing.
Okay.
All right, my question is on this EMR. Says here that there would be 250 for the entire DSA. Well, the DSA should be large. What if we have a larger need to get rid of those 250 west of here? If that's taken up in these other valleys, what's left if we need it on in Paradise?
If I may restate the question, in truth, you know, sure. Is the quota of 250 elk that may be taken with dispersal, management removals, or kill permit, is that sufficient to address all of the DSA?
Correct.
Okay. And that remains to be seen. Let me give some context to why the 250 showed up. And again, recognizing that the intent is not population control, but adjustment of elk with small-scale harvest. Very clearly, a significant piece of the input from some members of the public to the commission was, again, this is new. What's the bounds of this? Because the first work plan last year put no bounds on numbers, and that clearly made folks nervous. How big could this get? You say you're not going to take a lot of elk, but you also say an unlimited number of elk may be taken without management rules. So that represented, and it, when you look at the number of elk that are in the entire DSA.
Looks like you just kind of pick 1%.
It represents a small percentage of elk. And again, there may be, out of experience or out of this discussion, a request to the commission to change that cap. But right now, that's the cap that's identified in the general work plan that is available for us to work with.
So for 14, it would stay at a maximum of 250. And that being my question, what if those 250 are used up in areas where there's a lot more cattle concentration and elk concentration in these western valleys?
If we got to that point, if experience brings us to that point and that realization, the procedural step, cannot speak to what the end would be, but the procedural step would be to go to the commission and say, we need more elk under that cap. And it would be a public question to the commission, a public comment. That's the definition of the process.
I don't understand the timeline on that.
It's best to think about visits to the commission in the context of not less than 2 months. A proposed, if the commission adopts that proposal as a proposed item, that item goes out to public comment. Public comments received. And a proposal, either the same adoption or something modified with public comment, comes back to the commission a second time for an adoption. So you need at least 2 months to do that. And it's not uncommon to do 3 and insert that middle month dedicated just to public comment. So at least minimum 2 months.
Would you like me to put that on the parking lot?
Sure. When do I get to ask my next question?
After days and after hearing.
Okay.
Unless it's
really short. Sure. Just want to know what the possibility of research would be as we look at distribution of the elk in context to what wolf predation is doing. And in terms of the dispersal, we harvest here, what happens to those elk, how do they move, what's the possibility of some GPS followers in those situations, so we can get something we can all talk about. Observation is good, that's where all research starts, but we shouldn't base any real decisions on too much of that. We should have some hard numbers that we can all agree on, we can all look at. And that then would help towards the goal of implementing this work plan in understanding what the behavioral changes are and how this work plan can be implemented better in terms of behavioral changes with predation and with the removal, dispersal, whatever they be. So just wanted to touch on that and see how we could. Is that a possibility? How we could bring some level of science into this to help implement this work plan and make it effective?
I'll answer there's a couple of definitions, there's a couple of answers to the word possibility. Certainly the statewide working group's recommendations and the commission's reflection of those recommendations and their endorsement included the concept of research. Hey, conversations like this may come to debate, and it may come to a point where it's back and forth and can't go forward. And whatever else the two sides, if I may say it that way, come to agreement is like, you know what, this conversation needs more information. and research is the way. So it's possible, and it's within the realm of the commission endorsement to go back to the commission and say, you know what? We have this situation. We're not sure as a group what's the best way to do it, or we're not sure we're being effective when we apply these. So we'd like the research, and we think the research should look like this. There's a whole bunch of devils in the details, but that's the concept. So it's certainly available for discussion. The other realm of possibility is, again, fleshing out those details, good study design, and then, of course, coming up with a way to conduct those research logistics. Staffing, funding, those sorts of things, as we all know, cost money. So that's the other realm of possibility that the group would have to recognize and help the help explore and participate in the exploration of those funds if, in fact, that's where folks wanted to go.
I get on the list.
Absolutely. Mr. O'Meara?
I was looking at the 2014 work plan here, and it says prior, down at the bottom, first bullet, prior to implementation, hazing efforts shall recognize and define areas of functional and sufficient winter habitat with adequate forage and security available for elk. Where's that?
That's a good question. That's another reason the conversation is looking to include everybody. Because again, remember, it's not a recommendation to the commission, and the commission has not endorsed eradication of elk. And so if we're going to move elk from someplace, there's got to be intentional look and recognition of a place where those elk would be tolerated.
I understand that, but in visiting with hunters this fall, they're hunting on public land and they don't see a track. Not one track on public land. Now, this looks like you're going to put them on private property. Is that where you want to
experience?
Tolerable
experience to date that certainly public land, if it's available as winter range habitat, would be in that consideration.
Where is it?
I'm just talking at the concept level. I'll let the local folks say where that is and isn't. But at a land ownership scale, they look for available habitat. If it's truly available under those winter conditions, that might be said, yeah, that's a place we're not going to haze. That's a place we're not going to hunt because it doesn't represent a commingling risk. The reality that we've come to understand in implementation through last year is there's also places on private land where cattle aren't present at that particular time of year. And they do represent a pasture, a private pasture, that for the absence of cattle, for the presence of forage, is okay for those elk to be moved to. By the landowner's agreement.
I'm Bill O'Carroll. I haven't met most of you. It's the first time I've been over here, but I've been a participant in the Madison Elk Working Group for a long time now. And so this is sort of random thoughts, but I want to touch on a few different things. Generally speaking, we're fairly happy with how that has worked out over there. The management hunts have, people can argue, that generally speaking, it's worked pretty well. The hazer has done a good job. Everybody agrees on that. What we're not particularly down with is the CMRs, and in the Madison Valley, I just don't really see that happening much. I don't think that's going to be necessary. And when it first came up several years ago, at that point, FWP was saying there was no way we were going to hunt after February 15th. It just wasn't going to happen. So that's personally kind of where I'm still at. But the elk or the wolf thing, over there at least, I'm not a wolf fan, but it does seem like, to some degree at least, they're dispersing the elk more, and we're not seeing big concentrations like we used to be. And then, touching on the other point again about the public and private land concentrations, what we've been lobbying for is going to more restrictive hunting regulations on the private, or I mean on the public, basically, going to bulls only on the public, and then more liberal regulations on the private, cows and bulls, to create more hunting pressure down on the private. And at least in the Madison, I think that would create more of a sanctuary up on the public and more incentive for the elk to be up on the public. So, and I know there was another couple of points I wanted to make, but they're slipping my mind.
Thank you.
Question?
Mr. Muller?
Okay, kind of one for the parking lot here, but our quotas for our hunting district, 317, I believe the quota is 900. The biggest issue I see with that is along with Jerry's deal, is no winter habitat other than right where the livestock are. And that's purely, or mostly due to just the topography. Pretty vertical. Lots of forest fires in what was probably the largest area where they could go to, the Mill Creek Basin, or drainage, where there's not much seed in there. So anyhow, I think that's something that really needs to be addressed at some point. I realize there's parameters where those quotas come from. And my thought in this DSA area is that there should be some type of a subsection to adjust those quotas for areas for those elk, for habitat for those elk to go to. There's truly only habitat for 500 for the winter. And then we should be able to, that should be something that should be able to be adjusted.
And is that fair to say hunting quotas
yep.
in areas that have experienced natural disasters such as fire?
I think that's one of them. The other one is, like I said, topography. The larger the quota, the more animals there are, the more food they require.
For a clarification for me, you say quota, you mean to say the population objective?
Population.
Population objective. Quota is the way it's always been shown to me.
Yeah, the numbers are interchangeable in a lot of conversation. I just want to start. You're talking about the population objective that the department's conversation about.
Correct.
Per district.
If I can just jump in a second, at one point I slipped my mind. It's generally speaking working pretty well over in the Madison, but you know I'm sure that there was a cow with brucellosis over there. And it was very strange. It's in the north part of the valley where we're not seeing the elk concentrations much anymore. So we don't have a good answer to that. Other than we continually say we don't want to see elk and cattle interacting in late winter and early spring. So,
if I may, I don't want to leave anything hanging. Again, with questions. So, hunting. So, you speak to a couple things that people, as I hear them. You just articulated another value of an open perspective. That has an open door. Anybody can come in that has that interest and that expertise or that value to express. Because you just spoke to Druska's point, what are all the commingling situations and what are the answers to them? I just heard you describe, to your eyes, a situation that lends itself to commingling, and it's not, right now, a response, at least to the degree that you could see the answer to that situation, isn't in place.
Correct.
So this would be a place to have that conversation. What is the answer? If there is, just so everybody, so now I'm going to move to population objective process, to your point earlier, so where would be the venue? That might be a recommendation to this group, just to help people understand process. That sort of recommendation would get dovetailed into existing process that is about changing elk population objectives. And once again, we would see that sort of idea come back to the commission. So I just wanted to say that there's process in place to entertain those kind of conversations.
Okay. I've got another, I'm just gaining on that. It has more to do with the management of the map of the forest. And this is an observation only, but back a long time ago before I was around here, they used to have logging. And What the Forest Service would demand from the people that harvest the trees, they reseed it. So you have this the grass population up there. Now the Forest Service is in the habit of, I guess, burning it. And there's been thousands of acres burning market. With no seeding, the Forest Service has kind of stated that seeding doesn't really get reseeded.
Are you talking trees or grass?
Grass. Trees come back.
Yeah.
Trees come back, they take time, but and after the forest fire goes through, the Pine Creek Fire, the Frisbee Fire, the Mill Creek Fire, and the Immigrant Fire, you can name them, the paradise you have. And there's been no seeding, grassy efforts done by the Forest Service. There has been on private land, and the landowners in here that have done that have seen tremendous forage.
Can I respond to that real quick? I just disagree that even with some of those fires, they've got gold pride. It's little, but, and some of that used to be all cheatgrass and it's blue bush. And the fires are going to, we're going to get rid of the trees and it's going to be replaced by grass for a little while.
I'm just saying from my experience, okay. When the loggers went in there, they would receive a lot.
So is it supported on public land?
It's not from a scientific deal, it's been an observation.
We're all lucky here. We have a gal in this room who does that for us and quite well.
And so here's a conversation that may come to be a point of discussion with the group. And maybe it needs to be fed with a presentation from the forest, somewhere else, some research entities. Maybe a research piece needs to be framed up. I don't know that. I'm just trying to connect that sort of comment and process. And at a core scale, the topic connects with, again, with something the statewide working group recognized and the commission endorsed. There may be some sort of habitat manipulation idea out there that makes sense in the context of maintaining elk, maintaining cattle, and reducing transmission.
Guys, I'm going to interject for a minute. If any of you let me spell a word wrong on any of these book charts, I'm going to come back and haunt you in a later life. I did go to school in Big Timber. I am a sheep herder, but that does not excuse you letting me spell something wrong, okay? So, going back to question and answer. Is that Mr. Clinton?
I've got a question on the tools that you're identifying. Is there, for lack of a better word, policy that one tool is described the same in all the different regions? Or is each region different in the implementation of the policy?
Let me take a stab at that question. The general work plan that the commission has identified for 2014, and that's one of those documents back there, gives the definition for the tool and a brief capture of how, what process in an interaction with the commission those tools might be offered.
I'm meaning further down the chain.
He's talking about different working groups or different areas.
Like, for instance, let's say one region has people that maybe outfit, but they still, there's a problem and they aren't, one region says they can't participate in this late hunt or this, but in another region, maybe they're allowed to. Is there now a policy where everybody has to be the same or who makes these decisions?
The definitions of the tools do speak and do have an eye to consistency in those kinds of situations. So wherever else there's difference, the difference is we would first expect to see is what tools fall here versus there. But to the degree that the same tool falls in the same valley within the GSA, the intent of the commission's product is the tool definition would be the same.
Could we add to the parking lot or whatever that what happens in Miles City doesn't necessarily work in Park County? And, you know, it would be really nice if the guys that I work with at fishing parks are great. I've been dealing with a couple of them, and they've been absolutely great to deal with. But their hands are tied, but I can talk to somebody else who is dealing somewhere else, and it would be a lot nicer if them or their bosses, I know how the bureaucracy works, would have more flexibility, for lack of a better term,
I don't know where this falls in it, but there's times that it'd be nice if somebody could just make a decision on what would be good for that area at that time.
Yeah, you're speaking, I think
consistency, or I don't know how you want to put it, but
I think I hear you speaking to consistency and that balance of, you know, consistency defined at a program level and how that consistency meshes with dynamic circumstances in different parts of Montana.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, there's a constant pursuit of that interface. And all I could say is certainly those kind of things are, again, available for discussion here. Is consistency as far as it needs to be? Do we need more consistency? Or are people seeing an inconsistent application of the tool, and that's the problem, the inconsistency? But I don't know if I've addressed your comment.
No, the flexibility is what we need. Somebody that can make a decision based on what is going on at the time.
But there may be some, so let me back up. Right now, the tools do have one definition and are intended to operate within that definition. So there may be the need, like Dreska said originally, for a different tool that might need to be defined, or there may need to be discussion about how the existing tool is defined. But there is an intent to consistency.
Stand up so you can hear me. I think one of the things that we as working group members recognized early on is that every valley, the Paradise Valley and the Madison Valley and the Gallatin Valley and even further west are unique and different, and that was one of the reasons for the local working group concept. And I think, you know, Quentin talked around it, and Quentin's very good with wording. But that is what we're looking for, is flexibility of application of the tools that the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission adopted.
You don't want to hear what I want to say.
what would be the possibility? We're all interested in back to the goal of implementing this. Let's maybe identify a couple places here up the valley where we can do it. Let's implement it. Let's use them as kind of a demonstration place.
Well, and to that point, you know, I think when we talked prior to this meeting, the priority is that the risk period is coming. And so we need to have an idea of how we're going to implement these tools now. And while this discussion has certainly fleshed out some other areas of concern and places where we can have discussions and, you know, move to greater detail, I think that the reality is we have X amount of tools, and come, you know, January 15th, we need to be able to identify how those need to be used in Paradise Valley. And so to that end, you know, some of the other discussions that need to take place is how do we align those tools that we have with the circumstances that we have in Paradise Valley? And then what's our timing? I mean, we all know that the wheels of FWP and their process can move slowly. So our timing needs to be more aware of that. We need to be able to identify our circumstances in enough time to actually use the tool effectively on the ground. And then, you know, how are we going to communicate that? Sometimes I think communication is the biggest gap that we can have, in that people won't pick up the phone, they won't talk to the people they need to. We'd rather go to coffee and just discuss it. And I think we need to get past that and be able to pick up the phone and say, okay, Karen or Quentin or Howard or Dan, you know, this is what's happening. We need to be able to implement this tool. And then that process starts. And then what I want to know from everybody in this local conversation is, are we doing every single thing we possibly can? Have we identified every single tool that is available? Now, we have a paper that says what is available, but we also have the opportunity to identify a different tool and take that to the commission. Now, granted, that might not be able to help us in this risk period immediately, but it might be able to help us towards the end of this risk period. So it's not just because we identify a new tool, we aren't going to be able to use it now. Later on, we might. So that it's worth identifying something else that we haven't thought about. And so if these tools are enough, and then have we addressed every single circumstance in Paradise Valley BSA where commingling occurs and we could possibly use a tool to fix it? So, you know, while the broader discussion is good, the priority needs to be how are we going to implement these tools come January 15th? And so, you know, knowing that and knowing that this meeting, you know, concludes in a half an hour or so, I mean, what can we do to further that cause in the next half hour so that we can set ourselves up for the next meeting so we have more information to work with?
I think part of it is a lot of us know and are involved in some of the areas that are commingling where there's hotbed, and I mean, I'll throw it out there. We've got one herd that's pretty darn hot, and it's a big problem. Those producers that are in that spot, last year we had a dispersion hunt in that area or close to it. But we have there's two different groups of elk that are in play there. A small bunch that never goes to the hills. The other bunch, you disperse them and they will go to the hills. That small bunch, if they're staying in and they're commingling, they're going into some of those subdivisions and then they're moving back into the hay meadows. Those are the ones that are causing the commingling. Then we have the herd that Jerry's talking about. I mean, he's got a bunch of cows and we got 1,000 head of elk right in the middle of the hay meadow. I mean, they used to do hunts or let people hunt. I don't know if he still does it or not. They let handicapped people. And people would show up on the highway and all they caught was hell for doing it. And so there's that bunch, and there's a bunch that hit down by Daly Lake. That one gets hayed. That one's a little easier in some respects to deal with because there's a place to take them. Jerry's heard there's no, I don't see a place to take them. I mean, maybe Lone Bear just like to fence them. We run them in there and put them there for a while because they don't let anything else in there. But that's why they don't stay. So we need to address at least two of the herds coming up real soon. I mean, Jim is being really good back here and not saying anything. And if I was him, I'd be blown up because he's got a major deal on his hands.
And to that whole description that you just put out there, that's why we need to be able to identify all these different areas that you just did and then have that serious conversation that we have X amount of tools, so how are we going to use them? And we need to affect change. We can't go through another risk period with all of the commingling events that we're having. So as a group, as that local conversation, how are we going to use those tools to affect change? And there's a lot of people in this room that ought to be able to come up with some ways to make that happen.
For maybe in the partial agenda for this next meeting, we agree with you on what you just said. Figure out our problem at hand in the next month. Identification of the major herds and where are they going to go? I mean, those two things lead up several days of conversation. If we're going to have another meeting, let's just get those two right on the agenda.
Okay.
And maybe even make that just the agenda for this January sneaking up.
And so what we're going to be looking at then is what commingling circumstances are occurring in Paradise Valley and at what time. So does that capture that?
I think so.
And then to dovetail with that, I think just having that information, then we look at that proposed work plan and we say, okay, now, these are the tools. How can we use them here? And let's get creative about how we use them and consistent about how we use them and make them work to stop, to prevent as much as we can.
Any major tools?
Let's see, and it's major Elkhorns, just to be clear.
Right.
And then which tools apply to which herd?
Is it herds on location?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good. And location. Yeah. You know, and there was, I mean, we can keep doing this in sort of this open venue. There was some talk about, you know, if we had emails, we could send out, you know, X number of questions if people felt more comfortable answering some of these, you know, do you have commingling? When do you have commingling? You know, if we could get sort of a general idea, or if somebody doesn't want to talk in this kind of a setting, you know, do you have ideas of other tools that could be used? I mean, we could do some sort of a, you know, a four-question survey that would go out to everyone here, and FWP's got an email list, and Watershed's got an email list, and Tracy has one, so we would cover more people than are in this room in this local conversation, and ask them if they have other ideas for tools. And as we meet, if there's functionality in those tools and a reason to go forward, then we get right on getting them to the commission to say, we need to discuss about adding this. And then we also need to be able to have that discussion that says, how many times can we use this one and how are we going to use it and go forward with that. So does the group see any merit at all in, say, like a four or five question, I guess, I don't know if it's a survey or just answer the four or five questions in an email to get some more information? Or do we think we have enough information?
Let me phrase it a different way. I guess I'm wondering if it would be a more valuable use of our time to get the answers to number one before the next meeting. But the only way to do that is for you all to somehow let one of us know that somehow. And so maybe a survey, maybe just an email to one person, anyone who has, maybe it's a phone call. So I guess it seems like it would make our next meeting more efficient if we had at least the bulk of that identified. There may be additions at the meeting, but I guess thoughts on that.
And if you're looking for a location to house that, and you don't want to do a Fresco or anything, I would offer the extension office to do that, to have that map on the wall where folks come in and put that sticky dot and say, this is where it's happening. And the privacy would be maintained. We wouldn't share that information with anybody until it came to the next meeting.
Just in case it's helpful, I have years and years of survey data of where they are located during our surveys, and if that's, you know, a tool that would be helpful to this group to have a map of elk ranges, where we know that they, I mean, we have a pretty good idea of where they all hang out, basically.
How frequent are your surveys?
Well, we survey them every winter, and we did some drawing stuff too. So, and there's been some shifts, you know. There's definitely been some changes in recent years, over the last 5 years, some of the area concentrations and some areas that aren't used as much, but I think, you know, we have a pretty good handle on it, and it's always good to get more information from people who see things we might not get from the air, but it might be a starting point to have a map of where elk have been located in the Paradise Valley.
What time of year is that?
February. Usually February or early March. Yeah.
No, it's expensive to fly every month, but something of a September through February surveillance, so you can see distribution shifts before the general 5-week season, during that 5-week season, and then where they end up afterward. With the concentrations based on hunting, concentrations based on some level of access, where we have and where we don't.
So there would be a possibility then of starting with Karen's data and then adding, say, well, we could add to it as we wanted, or else prioritize which elk concentrations she has listed as the ones that we want to make sure that we start with. I mean, those would be some options. I mean, I don't want to bug everybody with emails and surveys if that's not what people want, but we do need to get the information or we can't start answering the questions. And so I'm open to any suggestions on how to get the information or, you know, flip over. So if anybody's got some suggestions.
I think you just post Karen's map here and then people can just either call her or whatever and say, you know, this is where we're seeing more, or somebody could just drop in.
Raise the hands of who would call me or stop in with that information.
I still need an email. We need to go out to people who aren't here.
Sure.
And so someone. Inviting them to come into the extension office and do a more call and do a little bit of mapping and elk concentration and time of year. And I don't know who has the best, whether it be Tracy's email list or. Well, and or the watershed, either way, and then they would all get them.
Probably both.
Yeah.
I have a question for all the producers in here. I'm having a little hard time understanding. Is there a reluctance to show that you have some co-mingling going on?
No, we know there's co-mingling.
I know that, okay. The reason I asked is I had an experience at Ennis years ago in the high school Ennis gymnasium where I'll just tell you the story. A producer, there was a bunch of people, it was about the same issue, probably 10, 15 years ago, Ennis High School gymnasium. And our previous state vet, his name eludes me right now, it wasn't Marty, was there talking. A producer stood up and said, hey, I got some elk in my feed lines, and I want you to do something about it. And this is what the state vet said. That if you have that going on, I want to talk to see you. And that whole place shut up. Every producer and every said another thing. And I'm wondering if that's the same issue here. Is there just a basically a fear of getting us?
I'm going to answer that question. And part of it, I mean, I think we're trying to all get past the fear and just take it because that's what it is. But I do have to tell you that historically, you know, producers had a partnership.
And this is before the APHIS rules change, way before.
Well, right. And yeah. So this is in the more recent years. But, you know, producers had partnerships with FWP, and we allowed for hunter test kits and elk testing,
right.
You know, in all of these areas that we had elk, et cetera. So we tried to work with. And ultimately what came from that is that the Department of Livestock used that information in those hunting districts to draw the boundaries for the designated surveillance area in all four counties. So, you know, it tended to, you know, put a real kibosh on the partnerships. But to that end, I mean, how much can you be secretive at this point about commingling? I'm not sure. You know, it's out there, and if we're going to address it with these tools, I mean, I don't know what happens. You just have to go forward. It's not comfortable.
No. Okay.
Thank you for your question.
Well, Jessica, I was just going to add to what you just said, and it might be helpful for a lot of the non-producers that are in this room to understand that the producers in here have been dealing with this exhaustively for years and years. Every producer in the DSA is required by the Department of Livestock to put together a herd plan. Part of that herd plan, goes into excruciating detail about your risk management. Do you have elk on your property or in your landscape? When do you have elk? You know, do they commingle with cattle? Producers have been dealing with this for years and years. We've been dealing, you know, do you have your feed grounds fenced off? Do you have your haystacks fenced off? Do you vaccinate your cattle? When do you vaccinate your cattle? this is nothing new to us. We've been dealing with FWP for years and years about elk presence, what we can do to minimize commingling, going through, you know, and spending exhaustive amounts of money, I mean, excessive amounts of money on personally hazing, refencing, fixing fence. So, you know, if the non-producers have some questions about that, you know, or an assumption or a preconception that, you know, we aren't doing everything we can, you're mistaken. You know, take it from somebody who's been through it personally. It is a brutal process.
I'd like to, along the lines of trying to disseminate some information to the non-producers that are here, I'm gonna step into some muddy water here. I do not want to confuse anybody. I'm going to keep it really short. I would like you all to realize that the RB51 vaccine that we have been using for years and years and years, since the previous one, strain 19, was discontinued, RB51 is safer. RB51 and even strain 19 are great, well, I won't say great, are good at preventing an abortion event in a bovine. Okay? They are not good at preventing the initial infection. Let that settle for a minute. We are all in the DSA vaccinating our cattle. Most of us in this room have been vaccinating since the late 50s. So as long as that's clear. One last point to leave you with is that whether it's, I'll just deal with this, and Dick and Quentin, you can correct me if I remember this wrong. One elk abortion contains hundreds of thousands of infectious doses. All it takes is a bovine to go up and sniff that, and they are exposed. Those are some of the important points that I thought might be helpful to express. Most of you probably know this. Wanted to get that out there to maybe help focus the discussion from here going forward as to why we're sitting in these seats. Thank you.
I think it sounds kind of, but you have an exciting agenda plan because there's progress and there's wheels turning as far as we're going to come together, we're going to map the herds, we're going to decide what commingling is occurring, and then we're going to decide which tools are going to apply and how we can use those. And we're going to decide if we have all the tools in the box or if we need to throw some work. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Am I missing anything that we talked about? I think the next step in the process, at least from my perspective, is to decide when that next meeting is going to occur.
And I think we basically have before Christmas or after Christmas.
Quicker question for this one.
Do we?
We do. I just typed one. So this is the last time you use your remote controls. I would like to remind you that they are property of the extension office, so if you leave them at the back table, if in fact you forget about them and they end up in your pocket on the way home, there's a mailing address on the back. You can put a stamp on them when they get to us. We appreciate that. You ready, hon?
The Madison Group is meeting after hunting season. What was it, just September 3rd or something like that? I would suggest the sooner the better.
Well, and I think there is an FWP deal. I think we have like conflicts until after December 12th. So to narrow that down before Christmas probably means that whatever that week is,
15th to the 20th.
That small window in December, or probably the second week of January.
And so really, if you changed your mind after Greska's last piece of information that says you got from the 12th to the 23rd, if you prefer, or the 24th, if you're one of those Christmas Eve people, you can re-vote, and it will take the most current vote.
There are 30 of you that were clicking before, so somebody's not clicking. Whenever Marty buys the beer. Can I click it? Are we good?
Oh.
That is before Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly before Christmas.
Okay. Also, so we will come up with a time, and we will email that out.
So my next question is, can SWP provide that map with the base information that Karen mentioned on it for us?
Yeah, the issue is going to be some logistics. I'll just get in touch with it. Okay.
Are we talking about, like, it would be here within a week, and so the email that goes out would be, you know, come, let's see, from the 14th on, it would be
it's not a huge concern, it's just a matter of printing it in a large format so that it,
okay,
that's the print it,
and if you can,
there's a big printer down here, we can,
So it would be available then?
Okay.
Are there any final comments from anyone?
I'd like to thank Juska for putting this on. I think this goes to the heart of what we're looking for, is your agenda up there and working forward from this thing. It's your terrain, it's your herds, it's your ideas, and Quentin is certainly an excellent resource. Don't be afraid to use Quentin as a resource as far as your region biologist. They are very good too, but really appreciate you putting this on. We struggled with the local working group ideas, with how much information should we try and provide from our group, how much detail do we go into, but realistically, I don't think you need a ton of detail as much as you need some balance looking at this project.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if we miss one thing for the agenda, if we have time at the next meeting, and that's after we identify which tools apply, what the process is in getting those implemented in a timely manner.
Okay. Can I put process of timely application?
Yes. And I guess I would ask that, you know, if there's something that somebody wanted to say tonight and didn't feel comfortable, I think my phone number was in the ad. I'm in the book.
Please. What is your phone number?
What?
I can give it to it.
333-4345. And you don't even have to identify yourself. You can just call.
I had a few loaded
ones. I'm going to answer the phone. But.
Sorry, Jessica, one more time.
4345. Or I'm sure you could, leave some sort of written comment or even come in and talk to Tracy or Marianne. I mean, I guess I just don't want anybody feeling like they got left out of the discussion in any way, shape, or form. So if there's other ideas that weren't discussed, bring them up. If there's another comment somebody wants to make, please make it. And we'll go forward from that and come up with a date. And we will email out that date.
And if you don't have email, let us know that on the sign-in sheet, and we'll call you and say, hey, or if you're like my daddy doesn't check his email, we'll call you and say, hey, it's this day. Put it on the calendar.
And actually, we'll probably tap into FWP and do another news release, too. We'll just, in the paper, we'll advertise it. And then that way, there's a greater chance everyone will get it.
No sharing secrets about my family with them that I tell you, okay? Nobody walk up to Harry and say, guess what she told us here.
Oh, don't worry, I'll tell you.
Before you guys leave, I want you to know for the next meeting, it will be this kind of type of hour. Feel free to use the first interstate parking lots in the back and come in through the alley. They're lighted, we have their permission. It's just a much safer environment back there. So feel free to do that, and feel free to stay and visit as long as you want to. Thanks for coming tonight.
Walk.